finally speaks. Not until it's aboard. Handsome Mike sighs expansively, nods to the Dom Nazhov. Puck jumps into an AAL, arcs up the controls. Servos and pistons whining, he slowly trudges down through the umbilical, Soraya hanging off the back of the suit. Handsome Mike and Double G stand with arms folded, watching the tattooed man wandering around the bay, tapping away on a handheld comlink. It's bleeding edge tech. Not sure of the make or model. Mike looks at the woman. Your man seems nervous. The woman doesn't say a word. Puck and Soraya emerge from the mow a few minutes later, a heavy biotainer locked in the AAL's grip. The tainer is 4 meters by 3, reinforced plastil, marked with Médecins Sans Étoiles seals and trimmed in yellow and black stripes. It's the kind you'd haul perishable med supplies inside, but since it has no external viewports, you could stow pretty much anything in it. Puck pilots his loader across the bay, stows the biotainer against one wall with a heavy clang. Making the motion of dusting off his huge, hydraulically augmented hands, he powers off the suit, lightly hops down to the deck. All good, Cap, he calls. Malikov nods, turns to the woman. Now, you got something for me, sweet? Blondie looks him over. Looks to her companion, who simply nods. Yes, she says. I've got yours. Her companion raises his comlink, flicks a switch, and every camera in the bay dies without a whimper.
Briefing note. WhisperNet chat between Hannah Donnelly and Nick Malikov. Her Majesty doesn't like to be kept waiting.
WhisperNet. Date 08-1575. Time 17:51 hours. Heimdall chat. Hannah Donnelly.
For a guy who asks me out a lot, you're pretty good at standing me up.
For a girl who turns me down a lot, you're awfully good at pretending like we're married.
Why am I standing alone in this corridor? Dunno if you noticed, there's a pretty big shindig on right now. I can't be late. Tick tock.
Hey, you switched times on me first, remember? I'm just being fashionably late now. Is it working?
If by working you mean killing a sale, then sure.
Killing a sale, huh? So I guess I'll just sell these 10 grams of prime bliss to someone else?
You're the one who's late. There's no need to be an asshole about it.
You have that effect on me, Highness.
My locator block will end in a couple of minutes, and I'm going to be missed. Are you going to be here or not?
Yeah, look, sorry. Other biz got in the way. I'm on my way right now. Gotta go back to Hab and get stuff, then I'll be right there.
You don't have it on you? What the hell, Nick?
I don't carry this shit in my pocket, just wandering around the station, Highness. I'm running, okay? Sprinting, no less. So congrats, you still get the boys all sweaty.
And they say there's no romance in your soul. See you soon.
Did you dress sexy? Hello?
Personal message, Pirate IM System Heimdall. Participants, Nicholas Malikov, civilian. Ella Malikova, civilian. Date, 08-1575. Timestamp, 17:56 hours.
Pauchuk. Cuz?
Nick M. Sup, little spider, I'm busy.
Cuz, where are you?
On my way to meet Her Highness. My pocket's full of joy. Why?
Was everything okay when you left Bay 17?
Yeah, it was fine. Docking system was acting up. Why?
Cams all over Heimdall are going down.
I'm looking at a hallway cam right now. It's still tracking movement. LED is still on.
Well, I'm not getting the feed. Someone's cut me out.
Ella, this station's a piece of shit. System's crawling with more bugs than Double G's pantaloons after his bachelor party. It's probably just a network fault.
Can't raise Dad or the others on IM.
Well, maybe you should suck less.
Hey, I got the fierce skills. I dance Heimdall's webs like a dancy spider thing. Dancy.
Maybe your dance moves aren't as fierce as you think, little spider.
Come back to the hub.
I got biz, cuz. I'll be there soon, okay? Then you and me celebrate Terra Day in style. You,
Me, 4 soundproofed walls and 5 hours of drunken karaoke.
Nick, I got a bad feeling.
Hey, my voice isn't that cringe.
I'm serious.
Okay, fine. It is that cringe. I'll be there in 20, yeah?
Nick?
Cuz, I got biz. Station doesn't stop spinning just because you get the crawls. Feel?
Okay.
Heart.
Heart. Cuz?
Yeah.
Be careful.
WhisperNet. Date 08-15-75. Time 17:59 hours. Heimdall chat. Hannah Donnelly.
Merrick, J.
Hey, beautiful. Sorry, I'm running late. We're just leaving command and control now. How's the party?
Donnelly H. Not there yet, nearly on my way. My party treats are running behind schedule. Keiko will be there, probably Claire. Hang out up the back with those fine ladies until I make it.
What? You still went to meet Malikov? Didn't you read my email?
No, I didn't have time. I had hair that had turned the noblest hero to stone, Jax. It could have killed the goddamn Kraken. It's fine. I'll just slip in and pretend I was standing with the girls the whole time. Dad won't notice.
He will notice. The first thing he'll do is ask me where you are.
He'll be giving a speech. I already heard it twice at home. I know what it says.
So where the bloody hell are you?
I'm waiting on my friend. He's late. Should be nearly here. Then I'll be straight into your arms.
Your friend? You mean your drug dealer?
I thought you'd want me to be a little more discreet on WhisperNet. But fine, yes, Nick is running late. I assume if you're leaving CNC now, you can't extend the block on my locator beacon. So I'll just make sure I'm moving in time. Try and be less pissed by the time I arrive. I'd like to try and enjoy the party.
Jesus. Yes. Look, I'm sorry. I'm tired. Just please hurry. Your dad leans on me hard enough as it is. If he found out where you were and what I did to cover your tracks, we'd be done. I care about you, okay?
I care about you, too. Sorry, didn't realize it would stress you out this much. I'll hurry, promise.
Okay.
Briefing note. An acquisition team report from the Rapier operative, recovered from Heimdall comm servers. It seems after the audit team landed, young Sam neglected to hide his tracks as carefully as he'd done prior to the seizure of the station. Maybe he was keeping a record to cover his own ass. It rapidly became clear that the audit team Leanne Frobisher sent to Heimdall was operating under a very different brief than he was.
Acquisition Team Report, Baytek Industries. Incident Incept, 08-15-75. Location, Jump Station Heimdall. Command and Control Building, Main Atrium. Operative Ident, Rapier.
It didn't need to be this way. They were the words playing through my head through this whole thing. Like some old media disc, stuck on infinite loop, motor jammed, needle bent. It didn't need to be this way. I was still on duty in command and control when the announcement went out across the PA system. Commander Donnelly wanted all staff present in the atrium for his Terra Day speech. Chief Isaac Grant gave us the nod when we started locking down systems, shunting alerts to our WhisperNet accounts, in case anything disastrous happened in the 10 minutes it'd take Donnelly to raise his glass and thank us all and wish us a happy TD. Yeah, in case anything disastrous happened. Chief Grant looked exhausted. He hadn't been sleeping too well. Worried about his family back on Carenza, I supposed. It had been over 6 months since the colony went dark to avoid UTA detection, and he hadn't heard a word from his wife or daughter since. Must have been hard. He showed me a photo of his daughter once. Cute. Not sure about the pink hair, though. What was her name? Katie? Something like that. I sometimes wondered if she was dead, if she died in the attack, or among the refugee fleet. I told myself there were probably still survivors on Carenza. Maybe she was one of those. I still thought about the idea that he'd never see her again. Wondered what he'd do if he knew who I was, what I'd done, what I'd allowed them to do. I'd already cut the live feeds from the station security cams through my ghost system, spliced them with looped footage of empty corridors and empty bays. Situation normal aboard Jump Station Heimdall. Nothing to see here, folks. Certainly not a fully armed squad of Baytech special ops goons marching along the corridors toward command and control. No, sir. No one could see the mess they left in Docking Bay 17, sprayed across the walls and dripping through the floor. A Médecins Sans Étoile biotainer stood in the bay, 24 personnel tubes stowed inside. Room for one operative with full kit in each one. All of them empty now. Like the eyes of handsome Mike Malikov and Saraya Ian Haji and the other House of Knives thugs they left cooling on the deck behind them. "You're going to miss the party," Grant said, smiling at me. "Come on, people. You've worked enough for one day. First round is on me." I plastered a fake grin on my face and left my station. Walking down the corridor beside the chief, chatting about nothing in particular, knowing full well what we were headed toward. I told myself this was war. Whether Grant knew it or not, whether any of those people on Carranza knew it or not, they signed up for war when they signed on to that colony, this station, this company. But it didn't need to be this way, like I said. We assembled down in the CNC atrium, outermost floor of the structure. The sight never failed to amaze me. Bubbling waterfalls and lush greenery. Stone borders around rippling pools, lit by all the colors of the spectrum. The walls and floor were clear as glass. Thousands of panes of transparent plasteel, reinforced with titanium weave. And beyond them? Stars. Countless stars. Constellations and clusters, and the Yggdrasil Nebula, slowly spinning past the windows, as Heimdall rotated around the wormhole at its heart. That subsonic hum felt just beyond the edge of hearing, that infinity waiting just above your head. When I first got here, I was nervous about sleeping on top of a rip in the fabric of space-time. I'm not sure how I'm going to sleep without it now. The party was in full swing. Music thumping through the roof. Light show bouncing off the plasteel below us. Staffers and civvies mingling. Ice miners and colonists and traders. Pretty much everyone left on the station for Terra Day had showed up. The ethanol and stims were flowing fast. I saw Sarah McDooling dancing on a table. Sinclair and Morley making out in a corner, after having circled each other for 5 months. Rikes and Roth were engaged in their regular debate about the perils of New Wave fascism. The volume turned up to 10, now that they both had a few under their skins. Warm bodies and smiling faces and laughter. All of them so alive. If everyone plays chill, I told myself, they'll stay that way. Someone shoved a glass into my hand. Impromptu toasts rolled among the CNC crew. Vilma Gonzalez kissed my cheek, wished me happy Terra Day. Her cheeks were flushed and warm, and her lips lingered just a little longer than they should have. She looked me in the eye and touched my hand and smiled, asked if I wanted to go somewhere quieter. I couldn't see Chief Grant anymore, wondered where he'd gotten to. But then Commander Donnelly took the stage amid scattered cheers, tapping on his Vox implant for attention. The music dropped out, and he began his speech. Loyalty and duty. Commitment and perseverance. Breaks for applause. Raised glasses and hear-hears. None of them had any idea. No idea at all. And then the elevator doors opened wide. Gunfire cut the applause to ribbons. And all of it went to hell. The walls around us were triple reinforced, even though Rex said nobody was allowed to carry a sidearm in the atrium. No amount of small arms fire was going to punch through the panes. Still, when the shots started ricocheting off our stars, My first instinct was to look down and freeze, waiting for the universe beyond to just dive inside. Partygoers began screaming, ducking, falling over each other in a panic as the audit team spilled out of the elevators and secured the room. Falk's team knew exactly who the SEC team members were, moved quickly to neutralize them, dropping Bateman, Lucker, Legrand, and the others with disruptor shots before anyone could blink. Kim Rivera, who ran the dojo, went down as she lunged for the nearest gunman, muscles spasming and eyes rolling up in her head. The team was outfitted in heavy tactical armor, greaves, boots, vests, gogs, helmets, weapons. All black. No ident, no core logos, nothing. Only Lieutenant Falk wasn't wearing a face mask and helmet at this point. I recognized him from the briefing Director Frobisher had sent me. Call sign, Cerberus. He was tall, heavily built, Norse blood. Ice blue eyes. Blonde hair shaved into a short faux hawk, tuft of hair at his chin. He was built like an ice hauler, towering over almost everyone in the room. Biceps bigger than my head. The Kevlar and plasteel plating he was encased inside creaked in agony when he moved, like he was about to burst the seams. He stalked out into the middle of the atrium and just stood there. His team fanned out around the room, VK burst rifles out and ready, introducing anyone who looked at them sideways to the business ends. But Falk was stone still. There was a strange smile on his face, faint, pulling his lips into a subtle curve, like he was laughing at his own private joke. Screaming in panic and tears all around him, he just stood in the middle of it, smiling. Eventually, the panic died down. The more sober partygoers brought their friends under control, stopped the screaming, the crying, the whispers. Must have taken 5 minutes. The whole time, Falk didn't move a muscle, like he was drawing all that chaos into him, drinking it dry, until that atrium was so quiet, I swear you could have heard a fucking pin drop. Falk looked around the room, still smiling, eyes like ice. When he spoke, you could feel it through the floor. "Who is in command of this jump station?" Soft murmurs, eyes searching. I couldn't see Chief Grant anywhere, but Commander Donnelly was still up on stage in his dress uniform. To his credit, he'd kept his head through the initial invasion, shepherded his people down off the dais, urged them to be calm. He was an officer, used to the snap decisions of command. He knew he was outgunned and outmanned, knew by their look these people were professionals. Obviously, they were here for a reason. He figured diplomacy was the way to go. Falk spoke again. "Who is in command of this jump station?" Donnelly stepped forward, stared Falk right in the eyes. "I am." Falk's pistol was out of his holster and trained on Donnelly in a split second. The shot cracked loud as a thunderbolt off the walls. The hollow point almost took Donnelly's head off his shoulders. Brain and bone. So much blood you wouldn't believe it. The commander's corpse dropped to the floor, feet still kicking, heels scraping on the deck like he was trying to dance. And then the screaming started again. Rage mixed in with the panic now. Rage and grief and fear. But Falk's team was ready for it. Ready for all of it. People who screamed too loud were pistol-whipped or hit with disruptor blasts, dropping to the ground in convulsions. Anyone who stepped toward an audit team member was dissuaded with a shot to the kneecap or a rifle butt to the jaw. The walls rang with it, metal hitting meat and meat hitting the floor. Stink of blood so thick I swear I could taste iron in the air. And through it all, Falk just stood there. In the center of that room, arms slightly outstretched, that smoking pistol still in his hand, that faint smile still curling his lips. The panic died slow. boiling fear and rage reduced to a simmer. Gonzalez was crouched beside me, clutching my arm as if to hold me back. I realized my hands were fists. Quiet fell. Quiet so deep it was deafening. And into that quiet, Falk spoke again. "Who is in command of this jump station?" Nobody replied this time. Everyone knew the answer now.
Briefing note. Following is a transcription of Heimdall security camera footage taken in corridor 272 on 08-1575. The commander is no longer in a position to wonder what his daughter does with her pocket money, but she doesn't know that.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
Hannah Donnelly's pacing when the footage begins. Nick Malikoff is late, and she's nearing the time she'll have to give up on him and head for the Terraday reception without her party treats, or risk her father noticing she wasn't present for his speech. It's 18:15 hours, a quarter hour after starting time. She's a teenager of medium height, medium build, nice curves, blonde hair back in a braid, blue eyes narrowed in irritation. Movements precise. That's the black belts right there, trust me. It's a wonder Malikoff likes to tangle with her so often, just saying. She's wrapped in one of those jumpsuits like all the core kids are wearing. Though here on Heimdall she's a little ahead of the trend. Black fabric with smart trim down the seams, which she's currently got tinted sea green. She makes a sharp turn at the end of her lap of the corridor, just in time to see Malikoff come strolling around the corner. Camera A17B12 shows he paused to get his breath back after the run before joining her. Shouldn't be smoking, chum. Donnelly stalks toward him, pulling a wad of exchangeable notes from her pocket and holding them out wordlessly. No point in making a traceable credit transfer in a situation like this. When you've got business like Malikoff's, a foldable polymer blend is the only way to go. "Nice to see you too, Highness," he says, pocketing the ish and making a show of patting down his pockets, like he's not sure he remembered to bring the dust. "Is this any way to treat your humble servant?" "Humble?" she repeats, laughing. "And I thought you'd run out of jokes. Hand it over. You think I dressed up like this just to wait around for you?" "Hard to say." He gives up the search, folding his hands behind his back as he starts walking a lap around her. "Let me get a look at that outfit from all angles, so I can be sure." She shifts her weight in a quick feint, and he takes a step back, grinning but wary. He remembers the allegedly broken arm incident, apparently. "Hand it over," she insists. "Nick, I swear I'll..." But she doesn't get any further. Malikoff reaches into a hidden pocket and, with a deep bow, pulls out a slightly crumpled corsage, set with six tiny white blooms. "What the hell's that?" Donnelly asks. Malikoff gives her a dimpled half-smile. "Jasmine. Obvs. I thought you said to get flowers out here you'd have to give up your right..." She gestures at his crotch. "You know. I got a spare." He shrugs, holds out his offering. "Happy Terra Day, Highness." Donnelly blinks, shakes her head. "Nick, I can't..." She's cut off by the crackle of the all-station public address system, a calm but unfamiliar male voice, and Falk's idea of a joke. "Attention all Heimdall personnel, this is not your captain speaking." Wonder how long he's been saving up that one. The words hang in the air as Donnelly and Malikoff stare at each other, twin pictures of wary confusion. For an instant, hostilities are suspended. Falk continues, "Your station is now under our control. Understand that we are professionals, here to do a job, and wish no harm to any of you. Cooperate and you will be safe. Resist and you will be... less safe." The colour drains from both their faces. Donnelly draws in a long, slow breath that would do any of her martial arts teachers proud. Malikoff stows the corsage, pulls out his palm pad and stabs at the screen. Presumably he's trying to open a channel to his cousin, but it looks like he gets nowhere. Folks still talking. If you are in Alpha Sector, please assemble in the atrium. All other sectors, your exit portals have been sealed. You will remain in place and wait quietly for further announcements. Follow instructions immediately and to the letter. Personnel in Alpha Sector, you have 5 minutes. Please do not make us come and find you. That would be unpleasant for all concerned. Holy shit, Malikov breathes. No, Donnelly's whispering, trembling. My father. My father's in the atrium. My friends are there, and Jackson. You can't be thinking about going down there. I have to. Are you dusted? Who knows what they'll do to you? I'm not going to hand myself over. I'm not completely stupid, she snaps. I need more information, and I'm not getting that standing here. Look, just stay here. Hide. I'll find out what's going on. Right, she snorts. You want me to outsource this to you? They've got my dad. And if you head in there, they get you, too. We need to know what these f***ers are up to before we start taking orders. Gone are the quips now, the smart lines. He's as white and strained as she. Trust me, Hannah. I got the connect to find out what's what. Trust you? Her voice rises. You're my f***ing drug dealer. So maybe I got ways to find out things you don't, he snaps. She holds up her hand suddenly, blinking. Are you watching WhisperNet? My contacts are dropping offline. He blinks hard, focuses on his lens. Yeah, mine too. How are they doing that? Malikov's eyes widen. I swear you can almost see the goddamn light bulb go off over his head. He reaches inside his jacket, pulling out a palm pad. A Ziploc baggie full of what could only be 10 grams of grade A tetraphenatrithylamine is taped to the top. Take this. Now's not the time to get dusted, damn it, she hisses. It's the palm pad I promised you, remember? He replies, rolling his eyes. So we could talk private? It's off the main grid, Highness. We'll be able to talk even if they take WhisperNet offline. Just take it, hide out, and let me do my work. I'll tell you who they are, what they want. She snatches the palm pad from him. Fine. Her surrender is sudden, sullen. Malikov blinks. Fine? Fine. We've got minutes. We can't spend them arguing. Go. He stares at her for a long moment, clearly not sure whether to trust her. But she's right, and with their 5 minutes slowly gurgling down the drain, he turns and he runs. She waits until he's disappeared around the corner, then turns to jog in the opposite direction.
WhisperNet. Date 08-15-75. Time 18:27 hours. Heimdall chat, Hannah Donnelly.
Jackson, please be there.
Hannah, thank God. Where are you? Are you okay?
I'm okay. I'm hiding. What the f*** happened? Are you guys okay?
Someone's hit the station. Terrorists? I don't know. But they mean business. They've got control of the computer and surveillance systems. We're totally blind.
Where are you?
Command and control. I got to the party, but Chief Grant called me back up when security cams started dropping out. We've locked ourselves on the bridge to give us time to think.
I think they're getting WhisperNet, too. My contacts keep disappearing one by one.
Mine, too. I'm not sure how long we have to talk.
Is there any way you can see the atrium, see if my father's okay?
No. They've locked us out of the system. I don't know how they're doing it. The protections on our grid are capital S serious.
Okay. Then I'm going to hole up. I'm not turning myself in when I don't know what will happen next.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Handing myself over limits my options. Staying out here increases them.
They have control of cams. They can see everything SecTeam could. Come to CNC. It'll be safer here with us instead of out there alone.
What, you're just going to open the door so I can creep in? It's too far, not safe. Recon before action, that's the rule. If you know your enemies and know yourself, you will not be imperiled in 100 battles.
What?
Sun Tzu.
Hannah, this is not the time to quote crusty old war strategists.
My dad would say this is exactly the time. Be smart, borrow wisdom.
Hannah, we can hear gunfire. People screaming. I don't think now is a good time to play soldier. I can't protect you out there.
You can't protect me in there either.
Hannah.
Falk T. Attention, Heimdall residents in Alpha Sector. Your 5 minutes is concluded. We thank those of you who have complied with directives to surrender. That was quite lovely of you. To all foxes still hiding in your little holes, woof woof. That is all.
Fuck. Hannah, you have to turn yourself in.
What, like you are?
Hannah, there's half a meter of plate steel between C and C and—
Jax, shut up.
I
think I can hear some sec team guys. I'm going to check it out. Back soon.
Christ, Hannah. Be careful. Hannah?
Briefing note. Following is a transcription of Heimdall security camera footage. Falk did say it was a bad idea to make his guys come looking for you.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
Footage is taken from camera 276R, commencing at 18:38 hours. Ruth Ellis and Gabby Salpeter are members of Heimdall's SEC team, and they are having a very bad day. They were late on their way back from patrol when Falk's announcement went out, and they bolted for the nearest familiar territory, the SEC team break room. There, surrounded by couches, their colleagues' lockers and abandoned food wrappers, they're following emergency protocol. Records show they'd already tried WhisperNet and found their connections dead, so they're standing together by a broadcast unit, scanning the backup channels SEC teams are instructed to use in case of comms failure. They've moved a digital notice board to give them cover, and to all but the most dedicated searcher, the break room would look empty. They work in quick, tense silence. But they've forgotten about their personal locator beacons. Plobes, the locals call them, which sounds like a cheery little noise. But there's nothing cheery about what's happening now. 4 Baytech audit team members are stealthing down the hallway, clad in black, full-body tactical armor, VK burst rifles at the ready, footsteps very nearly silent. The squad is led by Peter Romeo Bazarov, the tattooed trigger man who took care of the Dom Nazhov in Bay 17. He's got a hand scanner, and his gaze is locked on it as he stalks his prey. Inside the break room, Ellis locates the frequency she wants. Salpeter reaches up to the shelf above the broadcast unit for hard copy of the emergency codes, passing it to her friend. Romeo stops in the doorway of the break room, eyeballs the hand scanner, then gestures at the notice board. The woman to his right, I Rain Wong, tosses a concussion grenade in through the door with an easy overhand throw. Then she and Romeo duck back outside. The grenade detonates, and Ellis and Salpeter collapse as one, screaming, bleeding from ruined ears and eyes. Romeo calmly steps back into the doorway, lifts his rifle, and plugs the notice board, hiding them 6 times in a row. He proceeds into the break room with all due caution, checks behind the shattered screen and nods to Ellis's and Salpeter's lifeless bodies. "You forgot your trackers, kids," he tells their remains, "though they do ruin the sport." Laughing at his own wit and wisdom, he walks back past Rain and into the hallway beyond. Rain and the other 2 men on the Baytech squad prepare to move on, but Romeo's still studying the hand scanner. Slowly, he walks back into the break room, frowning at the display. He halts in the center of the abandoned room. Silent. Then he tilts his head back and looks up at the air vent above him.
Personal message, Pirate IM System Heimdall. Participants, Nicholas Malikoff, civilian. Ella Malikova, civilian. Date, 08-15-75. Timestamp, 18:38 hours.
Pauchuk. Nick?
Nick M. Ella, where are you?
That's the great thing about partial paralysis, cuz mine. I'm right where you fucking left me.
In Anansi? Doors sealed?
Yeah.
Good. Stay there.
Space pirates are shooting the shit out of everything on the station, and you tell me to stay low inside my fortified supercomputer? Any more advice for me, genius?
GU says.
What?
F you, cuz. I typing while I run. Give me break. Where Uncle Mike?
I don't know where Dad is. I can't raise anyone. Need to see what happened in Bay 17.
Way ahead of you. Headed back there now. 2 minutes away.
Jesus, Nick, be careful. Cams are all down. I can't see shit.
Fuck. They sealed doors out of Alpha Sector. Can't get to docks.
Oh, really? Where are you at?
Service bulkhead. A-48A.
Give me a sec. Ta-da!
God damn, you're good.
Oh, go on. I'm serious. Go on, damn it.
Okay, I'm through. On grav rail. Now. God damn this fucking lollipop song.
Okay, I cleared a path for you. Be quick. Auto sensor will shut the doors again eventually.
Okay, at docks now. Headed to 17. There in a sec.
Cuz?
Yeah.
I think whoever's flying their rig flagged me when I popped that bulkhead. They're trying to hack into Anansi. Jesus, they good.
Ella.
Give me a sec. Oh, mimic routines running on your roach cascades. Very clever.
Ella.
But no, you got crushed, didn't you? Spiders eat roaches, don't you know?
Ella!
All caps.
Ella, they're dead.
What?
They're all dead. Soraya, Double G.
Daddy?
Shit. Cuz, I'm sorry.
God. Ugh. What the fuck happened?
Popped. Multiples, close range. Empty biotainer here. Spots for 24 crew inside. Looks like we found out how our party crashers got on board. That motherfucker Wheaton. I knew I should have X'd that pasty shit.
Fucking dirts. Pig fucking shit eating motherfuckers.
God, Els, I'm so sorry.
Jesus, give me a sec. Their decker's still all up in my lady parts.
Shit.
Fuck me, trying to cut me out of network.
So get Dancy on his man bits.
Sec.
Cuz? Ella?
Network fail. Zero return.
Cuz, you there?
Network fail. Zero return.
Cuz, the bulkheads are all locked. How the fuck I get out of the docks?
Network fail. Zero return.
Shit!
Briefing note. Following is a transcription of Heimdall security camera footage from various locations. As noted, Falk said it was a bad idea to make his guys come look for you. He just didn't say who it was a bad idea for.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
The records on Hannah Donnelly's personal locator beacon show she moved away from the vent above the Sec Team break room after the deaths of Ruth Ellis and Gabby Selpeter, making straight for corridor A17D and the infirmary. She comes into view when she silently pulls the cover off the climate control vent, one shaking hand hanging down so she can drop it onto a bed, muffling the sound it makes when it lands. There are only two patients in the Alpha Sector infirmary, both unconscious. Everyone capable of moving was either shipped out for the holiday or dragged themselves to the party. With a little shuffling, she lowers herself down legs first, thumping to the ground. Around now, she must be glad she went for the jumpsuit. She lands in a crouch, wrapping her arms around herself and ducking her head just for a moment. Then she pulls it together, pushing to her feet in one easy movement. Can you hear me, Jax? She's so scared she's actually whispering at her WhisperNet connection instead of sub-vocalizing, but there's no reply. With a glance over her shoulder at the door, she hurries to a workbench littered with equipment, scanning it as she jogs her weight impatiently from one foot to the other. She grabs a scalpel in a case and shoves it into her pocket. It clicks against the palm pad Malakoff gave her, and she gives it a quick pat through the fabric, as though she's just remembering it's there. I have to admit, I was wondering why she didn't get the hell out of there, because she's scared all right, her breath's quick and ragged, face pinched. But the answer becomes clear a second later. Shifting to an infirmary terminal, she swipes her way through the menus, data mirrored in her eyes. She's going for the probe register, and dragging a finger down, she watches as the list of names scrolls past. She's looking for her father's ID. His body won't have cooled enough to deactivate his beacon yet, so she might have found it, except her friends catch up with her before she reaches the D's. There's a soft click in the corridor outside, and she pivots on the balls of her feet, diving behind a bed a fraction of a second before Romeo and Harry Razorback Raiden open fire. Their burst weapons rip through the infirmary, blast the door off its hinges. Over the next 15 seconds, they tear apart all 18 beds, including the 2 patients, the supply cabinets and the surgical section. Donnelly's crawled, sobbing to cower behind a countertop. She's lying face down, and a bullet punches through a finger's width above her head. Razorback speaks quietly into the silence that follows. Clear? She's here. Romeo is studying his hand scanner. Find her body. Confirm the kill. Rain and their fourth, Stanislaw Taurus Mayer, follow Romeo and Razorback into the infirmary. Weapons at the ready. The 4 fan out to search the debris, leaning down to check under ruined beds, behind the remains of chairs and monitors, boots crunching on the detritus scattered on the floor. Romeo clicks his tongue to draw their attention, and points to the vent Hannah left open when she made her entrance. Hannah's on the other side of the room, crawling for the doorway. She spent her whole life playing strategy games with her father, but it doesn't take a tactical genius to know 4-on-1, even without the weapons, isn't a game she wants to play. She nearly makes it too. There's 3 strides of clear space between the nearest bed and escape, and she slowly eases up to a crouch, hands resting on the floor like she's readying herself for a race. She's out of the starting blocks an instant later, and it's just plain bad luck that Taurus turns at the wrong moment. He shouts the alarm, swinging his rifle up and pulling the trigger. The infirmary explodes with deafening blasts, muzzle flashes whiting out the camera for an instant. Hollow point rounds shred the doorframe as Hannah dives for it, scrambling out into the hallway, hands clawing desperately at the floor. The footage transfers to the corridor outside, where she's stumbling to her feet, sprinting for the next corner as a black-clad kill squad pours through the door after her. Every training session she's ever had channels into this moment, and she recovers her balance, flinching aside as another shot clips the end of her swinging braid. She knows exactly where she's going, and there she has the advantage. She's also running for her life, and if that's not motivation, I dunno what is. She sprints along the corridor, grabbing a light fixture at the junction and swinging herself around the corner without losing momentum. They're close behind, blasting away every time she's in sight, but she's gaining a few seconds here, another few seconds there. Problem is, she's going to run out of corridor. She tugs the scalpel case from her pocket. The palm pad Malakoff gave her slips out with it and clatters to the floor, a small baggie of dust still taped to the top. She leaves it behind without a backward glance. Stumbling, she rounds another corner, and finally, there's her salvation, an open elevator. She hurtles into it, hands slamming against the button to close it as Romeo and co. round the corner and lift their weapons. Gunfire splits the air as the BT team empty their clips, the elevator doors riddled with dozens of gaping holes as they slide closed. Romeo and Taurus slam into them with a series of curses. Without needing to consult, they dash for the emergency staircase. Romeo's got his hand to his comset, demanding that someone in C&C explain why the holy f*** the elevators are still functioning. When the Baytech team arrives 1 floor up, the elevator doors are open. The floor's bloody and there's a spattered trail of crimson leading away down the corridor. Like the hounds Cerberus promised they'd be, they take to the trail. Scanner in hand, Romeo leads his squad along the hallway. They are quiet as ghosts, finally arriving at a sealed airlock door. The docks up in Alpha Sector aren't big loading bays like the one where the Dom Nazhov met their end. These are smaller, snugger places, for medevac shuttles to dock near the infirmary. The audit team forms a semicircle around the doorway, weapons ready. Romeo indicates the bay with a nod. "Her temperature's dropping," he says quietly. "She's bleeding out. Let's finish it quick and careful. Even kittens come out swinging from a corner." Footage from inside the launch bay is a little grainy, but the team's clearly visible fanning out in a search formation. Taurus holds just inside the door, so Donnelly can't get past them again. "Come out, little girl," Razorback calls. "Let's find you a nice patch of simskin for that scratch." "Something's wrong," Romeo says, still zeroing in on the signal. The scanner in his hand keeps triangulating, slowly narrowing the area to search. He lifts a hand to rub the back of his tattooed head, holding still, thinking. "Say what?" Rain looks across at him. "She's at 29 degrees. "And?" "Body temperature is 37. She's hypothermic." As he speaks, Romeo's pointing at a stack of crates, held down with webbing near the bay doors. He, Rain, and Razorback move in as one, rounding the edges of the crates, weapons at the ready. But Hannah Donnelly's not there. Her personal locator beacon lies on the ground in a small pool of blood. The launch bay isn't as well insulated as the rest of Heimdall, and on the other side of the airlock, it's -270 Celsius. The probe's temperature is cooling rapidly. In one smooth movement, Donnelly drops from her hiding place above the launch bay entry, lands behind Taurus and scampers out the door, her bloodied hand slamming into the door controls. They hum closed in 0.7 seconds, sealing the team inside and her outside. Donnelly stares at the airlock button, but there's no way to know if she wishes she could flush them. Her probe is in there, which means the system thinks she's in there too. As a precaution, the control panel is lit up a cheery locked-down red so nobody can accidentally get spaced, because wouldn't that be just terrible? Romeo's thoroughly pissed off, stalking over to join Taurus by the locked door and hissing into the intercom. "Let us out, little girl. You're only making this worse." Donnelly presses her intercom with one delicate finger. "Little girl, is that any way to talk to someone you just met?" "It's how I talk to the brat I'm going to roast on a stick in about 20 seconds. "Threats," Hannah observes. "Interesting tactical choice, seeing as how I'm on this side of the door and you're not." "Listen, it was a good fight," Romeo tries. "But we've radioed for backup. Open the door before they get here, and we'll even stop them from shooting you. I can respect what you did." "Who are you?" Hannah shoots back. "Why are you here?" Romeo shakes his head, smiling. The red light on the airlock control flickers out, replaced a moment later by bright green. Donnelly's locator beacon has cooled to 25 degrees Celsius. She's registered as dead. Regardless, there's no way the safety protocols in place on those external doors would allow them to open with a registered probe inside. But still, Hannah and Romeo both look down at the controls on their respective sides of the door. Hannah backs away a step or two, hands raised. The safety shutter on the window between them slams shut. "No, wait," Donnelly says. And as she sucks in a startled breath, a white light flicks on. Airlock disengaged. Purging.
Briefing note. Transcription of footage recovered from House of Knives hard drives.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
Okay, I'm going on record here. You guys aren't paying me enough to watch this stuff. Footage opens in a familiar auxiliary venting and storage room, AVS-3, situated above Heimdall's Hermium reactor. Present and accounted for are 23 dairy cows, including Nikki Malikoff's dear Miss Lucy, standing around their makeshift pen. A couple of jury-rigged security cams catch the show. Handsome Mike obviously wanted to keep an eye on his babies. He had all kinds of containment protocols he'd have put in place before tonight's festivities really got underway. There's a series of glass humidicribs along one wall, a couple of hazmat suits, and what looks to be a cross between a cattle prod and an articulated claw arm beside them. But given that Handsome Mike's lying dead in Bay 17, his babies and their hosts are completely unsupervised. The pipes and gauges lining the wall are literally dripping, and the cam lenses are partially fogged. The humidity must be close to tropical in there. In the distance, even through the soundproofing, you can hear faint gunfire. The Baytech audit team zeroed in on the reactor as their secondary season secure target on the station, right after command and control. It sounds like some of the locals are putting up a fight. It doesn't last long. Nobody from the BT squad ever comes to check the auxiliary room. A scan of Heimdall CNC files showed that AVS-3 didn't actually exist on station schematics. Ella Malikova purged all records of it to better hide her dad's get-rich-quick and slightly bloody scheme. And anyone on the Heimdall staff who actually knew about the room didn't volunteer the info to the invaders. Or run here for safety, come to think of it. Probably for the best. Anyway, all the noise and fuss of the invasion going on outside seems completely lost on the cows. The ladies are just standing there, eyes glazed. They're not eating, chewing, mooing, just swaying softly on their feet, as if to music, except there's no noise but the faint reactor hum and sporadic gunfire. Every one of them has a tiny bandage behind her right ear. Their needle wounds have been kept nice and clean, no chance of infection or sepsis. That Handsome Mike, huh? All heart. The cows' chins are slicked with drool, heads lolling like they're half asleep. Their eyes are gummed with something dark and viscous that at first I don't recognise. When it starts dripping from their ears and splattering on the floor, it finally clicks. Blood. It's blood. Christ, I feel sick. I need a drink. And a vacation, damn it!
Transcript pauses.
Okay, a little rocket fuel makes it all better. Christ, let's get this over with. The gunfire outside dies along with whoever it was aimed at, and the footage runs for hours with no real change. I can fast forward until 1940 hours, and the cows do nothing but softly sway and slowly bleed, which in itself is f***ing terrifying enough. Then, at 1941 hours, Lucy falls completely still. Her eyes go wide, and every muscle in her body tenses. Everything I've read about Lanimer tells me she can't feel any pain. The lava inside her is flooding her synapses with unprocessed tetraphenotrithylamine, and she's high as the goddamn sky. But I swear something inside her is awake enough to sense what's coming. Some tiny reptile part of her brain, struggling to be heard over the flood of chemical bliss drenching her system. Something that screams. This is very, very wrong. Lucy bucks, nerve endings firing on autopilot, ears twitching as if warding off invisible flies. Her right foreleg starts to shake, tail whipping side to side. Then she sneezes, and bright pink froth sprays all over the floor. The cow beside her starts undergoing the same fit, followed by another, then another. Lucy is making this weird noise, halfway between snorting and coughing. Her chest is heaving. She's drenched in sweat. But Jesus, her eyes. Her eyes, chums! They're still almost closed, like she's half asleep. Like this is some bad dream you hit right before the alarm clock goes off and spits you into your day, and you shake the sleep away and laugh to yourself about how scared you got because it's only a bad dream, chum. Just a real bad dream. But Lucy can't wake up. I'm calling that a mercy. Her eyes stay fixed in that dreamy, half-closed droop until a wet, crackling noise cuts across the audio track like a knife, and she collapses bonelessly to the deck. Her eyes are finally closed, bright red tongue protruding from between her teeth. And then, something pries those teeth apart. Something long and black, slithering out of her ruptured palate onto the blood-slit grill. It's almost 30 centimetres long, wrapped in a translucent membrane, flopping about like a landed fish. Other cows are dropping beside it now, thudding onto the floor. The newborn wriggles and flexes, splitting apart the sheath it's encased in. One end of it unfurls, like some awful flower, and then four serpentine necks sway in the air. Each neck ends in a tiny mouth, lined with row upon row of serrated teeth, sharp as needles. Even on the vidscreen, I have a hard time focusing on it. Maybe it's the hooch, maybe the stale ship's rations I ate 3 hours ago are trying to come back for a visit. The thing's skin is this weird kaleidoscope of, not colours, uncolours. It's hard to describe. I get a headache looking at it. It unfolds two tiny forelimbs, pushing itself up off the abattoir floor, those necks writhing to a melody only it can hear. And then it shrieks. It's the sound of 100 junky babies howling their way through birthday withdrawals. The sound of every orphaned child from every war zone you've ever seen from behind the comfort of your VR screen. It's hellish. That's the only way I can describe it, chums. Just fucking hellish. The shriek fades, echoing off the dripping walls of room AVS-3. Tiny black tongues slip past needle teeth and lick sightlessly at the air. Lucy's baby draws breath and shrieks again, the sound splitting my head. And right when I think things couldn't possibly get any worse, another shriek joins with the first. And another. Dark worm things swaying and screaming and slithering about in a deep pool of red half a finger deep. Fuck me. Like I said, you guys aren't paying me enough to watch this stuff.
Countdown to Hypatia arrival at Heimdall Waypoint. 1 day, 0 hours, 36 minutes. Countdown to Kennedy Assault Fleet arrival at Jump Station Heimdall. 0 days, 23 hours, 4 minutes.
WhisperNet. Date 08-15-75. Time 20-27 hours. Heimdall chat, Hannah Donnelly.
Hannah?
Oh my god, Jax, are you okay?
I'm okay. Are you?
I'm fine. How did you get WhisperNet back up?
Chief Grant did it. I don't know how long we have. Listen, where are you? Are you safe?
I'm hiding. Are you guys still on the bridge?
What?
Jax? Jax?
Radio transmission, Baytech audit team, secure channel 901. Participants, Travis Cerberus Falk, Lieutenant, Team Commander. Fleur Callie Russo, Sergeant, Alpha Squad Leader. Date 08-15-75. Timestamp 20-49 hours.
Callie, this is Cerberus. Over.
Cerberus, Callie, go.
A status report would be lovely, if you please.
Engineering area secure. Hostiles eliminated. Zero casualties. Walk in the park.
Splendid. Prisoners?
17 live bodies. 11 wormhole engineers. 6 non-essentials. Already secured.
Wormhole status?
The Heimdall crew shut it down, as expected, when we seized the station. Safety precaution. Mercury and Ballpark are bringing it back online now. The engineers are being kind enough to assist. A little gunpoint diplomacy works wonders.
And this maintenance that Operative Rapier informed us about?
Mercury's checking the logs now. Like Rapier said, our techs will need to finish off some work the Heimdall crew had planned.